Okay. We're going to resume. Okay, we're going to resume with the leasing project, and I apologize to the board members for this change in the schedule. It's because our staff were planning to go to the airport at 2 o'clock. So I owe all of you a snack at some point. Welcome back to our staff. No, not now. I don't have any. I have one snack bar, so whoever's on its best behavior during this meeting will get it. Nick, we're going to turn over to you and walk through these papers.
All right. We're going to move over to Agenda Paper 5C, which is Memo 189. This is on the disclosure for short-term leases. There was discussion in the last meeting when the decision was made on the practical expedient, what the impact of the disclosures would be. All of that is detailed in the paper. Our recommendation is to disclose the short-term lease expense, which as a function of deciding to do the table in our last session, it's in there, but also to make a statement to indicate if the entity's short-term lease practices would result in a material change in the next reporting period.
Okay.
Any questions or you agree? Sounds
I've
good.
I've got one.
One of the reasons why we gave an option to not put short-term leases on the balance sheet was because we didn't want to force people to go in and determine the services. So when you say short-term lease expense,
right,
do you mean all cash flows under the short-term contract?
I think we should clarify that because we're not making them jump through all those hoops, this should be the expenses
associated with short-term contracts that include a lease.
That the short-term contracts that include leases, yes.
Okay.
They take the practical expedient on.
Okay. Practical. Stephen?
My preference would be A, because that's what we currently do under IFRS. And I think that's clear, and it links in with everything else we're doing under leasing. It's the commitment. The problem with what you're suggesting is that it's, you look backwards and say, well, is it going to change in the future? But the amount that you're going to have is not the commitment in respect to short-term leases. It's the full expense that you expect next year for existing short-term leases and new short-term leases. As long as we make clear what it really is, then I guess that's okay. But I say my preference would be to keep the current IFRS disclosure.
I'm sorry, could you, I'm just getting myself oriented here. Would that be A, B, or neither?
A.
A. Okay, thank you. Okay. Others? Okay. Does anyone disagree with Stephen's recommendation?
Why?
Whoa.
What?
That's the closest.
Okay, others who would like to speak?
What is U.S. GAAP required? I think that's an IFRS.
What we have right now, based on all of our decisions, is a maturity analysis that starts from the reporting date and the 5 years thereafter, which is consistent with IFRS. Today's GAAP doesn't have that first year.
Right.
Okay, so that's that difference. What happens here is that what we're recommending is that the short-term leases would just drop out of that schedule. It doesn't mean that bucket goes away. That's still there for the short-term portion of all the long-term leases and the leases that are in the liability to make lease payments. It's just these.
Okay.
Is the recommendation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
No, I support approach B, like the majority of staff. I think that is good enough for us, and I think we said that will give a good indicator of what has happened, what will happen. We, I think, also talked about adding possibly some word if there were some major changes of direction that would be added on to.
Absolutely.
I think that gives us as good indication as could be asked for.
Okay.
That's B.
Sorry. Talk.
Yeah, I support C, approach C, for the benefit of preparers.
Okay. And Darrell?
Didn't we earlier this morning agree to disclose various components, and one of them was short-term rent expense?
Well, that was part of what I had. We already said the expense.
So the only difference is here in approach B, we would just add to that
statement.
If we see something coming up that's going to make the next year different, we would disclose that. But we really already agreed to disclose the expense, so that kicks out C anyway.
It kicks out C.
Right?
Right.
Okay. Let me rephrase my question. The staff is recommending approach B, and I think Russ's clarification is a good one, that it would include the entire payment, all of the expenses flowing through that line. ISB, who disagrees with the staff recommendation?
I disagree.
Okay.
Amaro? Yes.
Russ?
The question is, I think we have only one question on this paper. If we agree to have A, because we decided before that we are going to disclose expense already.
No.
So C is out of this paper. B is out of this paper as well. So we have only one question. A, if we do agree to have A.
Are we adding A?
No, you have to. And there's also the qualitative add-on.
The qualitative aspect, but the expense we already decided.
That was a new question that came out of order.
You know, it was implied.
It was implied by the table. We didn't. Yeah, right. Okay. That's good.
You are reconfirming.
Yeah, sure.
But, Amaro, I'm sorry, I am confused. That would suggest B, though.
We're reconfirming B.
B, okay, because you said A, so I was confused.
No, B is already decided.
It says B is already decided, so the only thing we can do incremental is decide to do A also.
That's
not
right.
But B isn't decided without the money.
Daryl. Right. We voted earlier to just disclose the expense. This is also saying, and qualitative disclosures if you expect a change. To me, that's the... Do you want to do that, which is the second half of B, or do you want to do A?
Yeah, second half.
Second half of B or A.
There you go.
Okay. Who supports the second half of B, which is the staff recommendation? Right? Okay. ISB?
11, 12.
That's wait, any more?
Sufficient.
Okay, thank you, yes. And FASB, who supports the second half of B staff recommendation?
Sufficient.
Okay, and so that is a clear majority of the FASB as well. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so do we have to ask it? Okay.
Yeah, we're
all right, good.
One down. Okay. And so you're taking us next to?
We're going to Agenda Reference 5A, 187, Statement of Financial Position.
For lessees.
That's right. There was some discussion yesterday about some of these topics in the context of lessors. This is a lessee paper. Lessor will come back. The first issue, the staff draft, or the exposure draft, excuse me, had said that assets and lease liabilities should be presented separately. A lot of comment letters said sometimes these things don't warrant separate presentation in the statement of financial position, so the staff is recommending that the final standards say that the statement of that right of use assets and lease liabilities be separately presented or disclosed in the notes, and if they're separately disclosed in the notes, reference what line item you'll find those assets or liabilities in on the statement of financial position. Do the boards agree? Okay.
For the record, okay. They should be disclosed in accordance with the guidance in IAS-1, so we don't need to really address this. But the reason why people feel strongly about not putting them on the balance sheet is because they don't want analysts or anybody else to quickly pick up and see the leverage that this project is going to display very prominently. Okay? And this is one of the reasons why we're doing this project, so that leverage in organizations is more transparent to the user. Okay? So I disagree strongly with this. To the extent something's immaterial, you have IAS-1. But otherwise, it should be prominently displayed.
Okay, thank you. Mark?
Ditto.
Okay, thank you. Any other points? Okay, staff is recommending basically allowing an alternative approach to presenting this information. Rather than prescribing.
Not prescribing it within the standard separate presentation.
Exactly.
If there's other standards that drive it, different story.
Okay. On the IASB, who supports the staff recommendation?
Yes. You need to add me.
That's 10. On the FASB, who supports the staff? 10.
10.
I counted there.
Okay. On the FASB, who supports the staff recommendation?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Do you get half?
Oh, yeah.
Five. Okay. Thank you.
Second issue is where to present the right of use asset. The exposure draft called for the right of use asset to always be disclosed separately within PP&E. We are recommending that the right-of-use asset should be presented in accordance with the function or the nature of the underlying asset. Do the boards agree?
And where it is, and disclose which line item it's in?
Well, yeah, that's right, right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's from the first.
Yep, gotcha.
But that would happen.
Okay, so rather than prescribing PP&E, it's based on the nature of the underlying. Tom?
In the Ed session, I asked you to do some research to see if function, the terms function and nature are defined within GAAP anywhere.
And the answer was?
We're going to do that as part of FS5. They're used in IAS1.
It just seems to me if we're going to make this, people have to understand what those terms mean. And it was clear to me out of financial statement presentation, people don't understand what those terms mean, even ourselves. So if we're going to do it, it would seem to me if you've got it in FSP, maybe you export it, you know, import it in here and define the terms.
Okay.
We define it in terms of expenses in IAS-1.
Within
but
standard.
But not assets. But I have a question here. I would like to amend the staff recommendation to say classified similarly to owned assets of the same nature and function. The reason for that would be people might argue the nature and function it makes this an intangible. And I think if you classify the same as an owned asset, you'll get consistency.
The one problem that we had with that was if I lease land. We thought that if you have warehouses, the function, the nature of the underlying asset or an owned warehouse, they function and they work the same way.
Yes.
Land appreciates when you own it, but leased land does not appreciate. It's not the same nature, and so we thought that that would actually accommodate the separate presentation of, in that case, when the right of use asset in that case has a different nature.
I would never have thought about it that way. In other words, leased land or owned land is land, and I would have put it with PP&E.
So you're going to depreciate land?
That's the Tom's point. We all don't agree on what function and nature means.
Yeah. Right.
Well, but do we need to use those words? I mean, I think Paul's suggesting.
Well, I think Paul's idea is already dealt with because it says presented within PP&E. It doesn't say that it could be an intangible.
My only question on the land issue is, so if you lease a truck, you own a truck, to me I can't imagine that's going to be significant. But will it matter from a user's perspective if you just put it in with land, knowing how some land is not depreciated, but this land would be depreciated or amortized? So that's why I just thought it's as simple as land owned, land lease.
Yeah, I don't
know
why it's that big of an issue.
Is it Hal?
Yeah, I was actually going to ask the same question. You know, is it another way of saying, you know, put it in the same place as if you would own the land, or excuse me, own the property?
And in most cases, yes.
That's how I interpret it. If we've got this one issue, I kind of like with Russ, I'm not going to get confused about this.
Right.
Well, so can we just... Let's say it in plain English and not introduce new words that might cause confusion.
Yes. Please.
Do people disagree with that basic idea?
Okay.
but you should classify it the same way as if you had owned the underlying?
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Last item.
Did they all agree?
Yeah, I think, did anyone disagree with that? No.
It's all up.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. Last issue is some comment letters addressed whether or not we should establish whether the right-of-use asset is an intangible or a tangible. The staff thinks that for presentation purposes, we don't need to address whether the right-of-use asset is tangible or intangible.
Very good policy. Can we leave some questions unanswered?
You don't want to cancel.
Stephen.
Is that, this is important for the banking industry.
Yes.
So are we doing them a bit of a disservice by ducking this issue?
Depends on how we answer it.
The regulators or the
it's not answered now. Potentially.
So,
go ahead, Nick.
No, I was just going to ask. So presenting these things as, for practical purposes, they're going to get presented as PP&E, as if they are tangibles.
So why do we just say they're tangibles?
Go down. Oh.
Okay. Well, so your reaction indicates that they're intangibles. So let's say they're intangibles.
Okay. Okay. Elka.
I would just echo what Stephen had said. I think it doesn't matter for presentation, and you can put it wherever you want. But that doesn't mean that we can back off the question because it matters for potentially other accounting question and matters for regulatory question, and people will actually just say, that was fine. You just avoided to answer the only mattering question.
The only question that matters. Yeah.
Hal? I'm with Steve on this. I think we're avoiding an issue, and we ought to just deal with it head on. And we already have answered it. If it's in PP&E, we're saying it's a tangible from my perspective.
Yeah. In other words, it seems to me that if we were to answer the question to say it's intangible, it has consequences.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the only reason to answer the question is to clarify a regulatory matter. I just don't think that's our job, personally. But no one else cares. Daryl?
It's not just for regulatory, though. It's not just banks. It's for borrowers as well, because a lot of borrowers have loan covenants that measure tangible net worth. And the way they do that is they, you know, take out the intangibles. And so potentially it could affect those calculations as well. However, we don't, with current leases right now, I mean, they're treated a certain way, which is they're considered to be tangible. And I think that these would probably fall in the same way. So I'm not uncomfortable with not addressing it directly, although it could cause some confusion.
John?
If we were going to address it directly, I would say that technically it is intangible, but it's unique in that it's a right to something that's tangible, and explain what it really is.
I think John's supporting the staff recommendation.
That's why we should have answered this question.
Exactly. Was it Pat or PK? No.
Nothing else to add. I think we need to say, I feel it's an intangible asset. If we can give a break to Nick because he's only talking about presentation. We can give a break today, but we cannot kick this can down the road too long. That's all I wanted to say.
Let's spend the next 3 hours on this.
No. Larry?
To John's point, we're changing something that previously we had gap for, and to the extent that regulators need to address this, or banks need to address it, or what have you, let them address it. We'll call it what it is, and then let them figure out how they want to treat it.
Yeah, but there you put it kind of misleads where you're thinking, though.
I know. No. So, we're saying it's a right of use of a piece of PP&E.
And then put it in a separate account as one of the immunity
then. Amar.
I don't know if this is going to help or not. But the definition of intangible, and I'll read just for my benefit, is an identifiable non-monetary asset without physical substance.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Question, we have a definition that is this, one line, and I'm puzzled with this here. So is it really necessary to respond to say it's an intangible, or because it doesn't fit well in our definition, so we have a problem with our definition of intangible? What we are doing here?
Changing gap.
We are, but we haven't fundamentally changed the substance of these arrangements. We're just accounting for them differently, right? Okay, I'm going to call the question. The staff is recommending that we not prescribe whether these are considered intangible or tangible. FASB, who supports the staff recommendation?
Five.
That's five. And
six.
Oh, six.
Six. Okay. And IASB, who supports the staff recommendation?
One, two, three,
six. 13. 13. Did you just change? Okay. Okay. Any other amendments?
That's it. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Thank you. It's time for lunch. I beg your pardon, guys. One more second.
Yes. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Now you're on.
I just want to take this opportunity to dwell on the fact that this is probably the last meeting that David Humphrey is in our midst. He has been with us at the ISB for 2 years as a secondee from PwC. And just to show, and this is to the listeners at home, especially young professionals, how good an investment it is to work here for a couple of years. he's returning to PwC as a partner, well deserved, recently promoted. I think this reflects on the very good work that David has done for us here. So we wish him well, and we wish his wife and his family well, because a truly important thing is happening in the next couple of weeks, which is that you're going to have your first child.
Oh, nice.
And so we wish you well, both personally as in your career. I'm sure both will go very well. Thank you, David.
Thank you very much. Okay, so board members, we're going to have a working lunch, adding insult to injury. So if everybody could go grab a sandwich and then come back, and visitor or observers, we'd like you to come back at what time?
2:30.
At 2:30, please. Thank you.
What are we going to do?